All right, so hello everyone, welcome to section 3. So in this section, we're going to be taking a look at Android fundamentals, so the concepts behind the API, as well as taking a closer look at all of the SDK tools that were available. So just a few announcements. As always, we have lecture videos online at our course website /lectures, as well as section information. So now, by popular demand, we're now posting topics of sections in the section description. So if you click the little event, you can see a short description of what we'll be covering in section. All right, so first we're going to take a look at the Android API and the fundamentals behind it. Then we'll take a look at the API itself and how we can do some simple programs. And finally, we'll do some demos with the SDK tools. So as always, I have a nice little feedback page at myname.com/e76/feedback. Feel free to let me know how the section was or if you want to leave any comments anonymously. So just a brief history of Android itself. So Android began back in July 2005 when Google acquired a little startup out of Palo Alto, and it really wasn't clear what that startup was doing, but Google got them. And so in 2007, we formed the Open Handset Alliance, and this is kind of like a business consortium of carriers, of hardware manufacturers, of software manufacturers that kind of maintains the Android project and its vision. And so in October 2008, the Android software is completely open sourced under the Apache license. And so as Dan mentioned in lecture, we can actually take a look at all the source code actually powering our Android apps. So Dan also mentioned that we want to try to target the lowest API possible. And so here is just a quick list of all the changes that were made in each API iteration. So in 1.6, we got a lot of the major features, as well as expanded search framework and text-to-speech. And so I've included this just as a reference. We don't have to go through them all in the interest of time. But here's just a brief list of the features that were introduced in each API version. So if you're wondering, oh, you know, I want to do something that involves the user highlighting text, you know that you need to target the 2.3 API. So rather than going through all the Android docs and looking things up, that's just a quick reference. So setup. So as Dan mentioned, there's a lot of different components that are going to work together with the Android API. So the first thing we'll need is the JDK, so the Java Development Kit. And so this is going to power all of our Android applications and allow us to compile them. I will also be using Eclipse with this class, which is an integrated development environment for easily developing and debugging our apps. And then finally, the Android SDK itself. So the Android setup spec contains really detailed instructions for getting this up and running on your computer, regardless of operating system. And that's available at cs76.net/projects. So to create a new project in Eclipse, once it's all set up with all the SDK components, we can go to File, New Project, and then we can create a new Android project. And so we'll be given options to give the project a name, give our first activity a name, and choose a target. So we noticed that we need this package name, which, as Dan mentioned, should be unique. And so basically, there's a Java tradition or naming convention where you're going to use a reverse URL, because the URL is probably unique because you own the domain. And so we can use something like net.cs76.net, or net.cs76, not .net, and then dot the package name and some other unique identifier. So we don't really need to give a min SDK version. If we want to, we need to make sure that it is the numerical API level number. So for 2.3.3, we want to type in 10 for that min SDK field. So the Android system architecture is huge, and it has a lot of different components written in different languages that are all working together. So at the very top level, we have the application. So these are your apps themselves. So something like your email client, the home screen is an app, or even the apps that you'll be putting on your Android device. Underneath that is the application layer. So this is the libraries that include things like views, common content providers, like your contacts content provider. And so where a content provider is just something from another app that makes its information available to other apps. Underneath that, we have the Dalvik VM. And so this is the specialized virtual machine written by Google that's designed for low memory devices and multitasking. And so all of our bytecode is going to be running on this virtual machine. But underneath that, we have these native C and C++ libraries. And so these are made available via the NDK, but they basically implement some of the more CPU-intensive tasks like OpenGL, the WebKit browser, the WebKit layout engine, which is used by the browser on Android, is part of this native layer, as well as the database engine, which we'll be taking a look at to store user data soon. And finally, underneath all of that is the Linux kernel, which is used for things like process management, memory management, drivers, and stuff like that. So all of this is all open source. You can take a look at it. We'll really only be concerned with the top two layers, but this is just a quick overview of the entire Android system architecture, just so you're aware of it. So the process of creating an app is a little more complicated than just compiling a Java class. So first, we're going to do just that. We're going to invoke Java C to compile our .java files to bytecode. So this is going to be Java bytecode. However, we're not running on the Java VM. We're running on the Dalvik VM. And so we're going to use this tool dx to convert the instruction set for the Java VM in the .class files to the instruction set for the Dalvik VM. So not, you know, an arbitrary class file cannot be converted to a Dalvik class file because the language of the subset of Java that's used on Android devices doesn't include the entire Java programming language. It doesn't conform to things like the Java ME standard. So just be aware that you can't just run this on some class files and think that, okay, they're Android apps now. That was sweet. And so finally, after we have all these new class files, which are .dex files and they're bytecode for the Dalvik VM, we're running AAPT, which creates that Android package. So as Dan mentioned, these are totally zip compatible. So you can open them just like a jar file. You can just open them up on your computer as if they were a zip and take a look at all the files inside of them. So while this looks really complicated, it's great that in Eclipse we can just click a nice little green button and all of this happens for us. So our APK package also includes some non-code data. Things like images or constants or stuff like that. And so inside of our Android project, there's a special folder called res, which stands for resources, which is any piece of non-code data, whether that be text or images or anything like that. So we have separate folders for different types of resources. So for example, we have this folder called drawable, where we're going to put all of our images, all of our layouts, which we'll look at very shortly, which are XML, can be found in layouts. And finally, there is a special XML file called strings that's going to define all the predefined constants that we'll be using in our app. So all of these resources can be accessed with this special class that's auto-generated for us called R. So this just associates everything in our app that is not pure code, so things like our layouts or the views within those layouts, with a special numerical ID. So instead of attempting to try to keep track of that ID, we could use this special class to find them by their name, which we're going to take a look at shortly. So Android applications have different components to them. The first of which we took a look at today are called activities. So an activity is basically a single window, or because there aren't really windows on a phone, unless you're using Windows Phone, huh? So basically a single screen on the phone. So basically, you know, a panel or a single thing on your phone. So inside of these activities is where we're going to put our GUI elements, which are all going to be view objects. We also have services. So service is different than a view in that it's going to run code that has no visual component. So something that's run in the background, like playing a media file or polling a server, that's going to be a service. So it's going to be extend a different class than an activity because it's not going to have a visual component to it. There's also broadcast receivers, which are special classes that can respond to system events. So as Dan mentioned, getting a text message or a low battery, we can have special classes that respond to events given to us by Android itself. And then finally, we have content providers, which can make our app data accessible to other apps, or other apps can make their content accessible to us. So for example, if we wanted to access a list of the phone's contacts, we would need a contact provider for that. So each of these things has what's called a life cycle. And so that's the time that it's kind of active or running on the device. So an activity at any point has one of three states. So the first is running. So that means that it's currently displayed on the phone to the user. The user can interact with it, and basically it's active. The next state is paused. So this is when our activity has lost focus, but it's still there. So if there's something on your app like a pop-up or an informational, you know, little thing, so the activity is translucent behind it, it's going to be in the pause state. So it's still running, And the user can still kind of see it, but they can't interact with it because there's this other activity or thing blocking it. And finally, the activity can be stopped, in which case it's not visible to the user at all. They've moved on to another activity, or they've gone to their home screen, or something like that. An important thing to keep in mind is that any activity that is not in the running state, so it's not in the foreground, can be killed at any time by Android. Now, if you have a lot of things open at once and your phone says, I'm running out of memory, I need to kill something, it can take out your activity as long as it's not currently running. So basically, we cannot rely on activities remaining in the paused state, even though that seems like something maybe we could do. If your activity is paused, Android says, actually, I can kill it even if I really need to. So a specific callback is fired for each of these state changes. We saw that flowchart diagram easier. This is just kind of a more concise way of looking at it. So onCreate is called when the activity is first started. So before anything else happens with the activity, any Android code that runs associated with the activity, this onCreate is fired. So here's probably where you want to do all of your initialization of stuff. When the activity is about to be displayed to the user, so it's everything has gone on, Android has done everything that Android needs to do, or about to present the activity to the user, the onStart callback is fired. So we also have callbacks for these changes of going to pause and to stop. So onPause is fired right before the device is paused, onStop right before the device is stopped. So it's important to consider that if we're going to do something like save application state, we do need to do it in onPause, since we know that onPause will be fired because we cannot remove an activity that's running. Question? So the question was, are all these methods blocking? And yeah, we are guaranteed that they will be called in a certain order. So we know that our onStart won't be called in the middle of our onCreate. We can reliably say, OK, all of this in onCreate needs to finish before all of our onStart finishes. So in that diagram, there's kind of a queue of callbacks that are listed. And so that's a more detailed view. Because for a given state change, more than one callback could be listed. But it's a very well-defined queue, and they'll always be called in that order. OK, so creating an activity. So an activity has two components, usually. We don't necessarily need the second one. But we're going to have some Java file to define the behavior of the activity. So what it's going to do, how it's going to respond to the user. And we can have an optional XML file to declare the layout of the activity. So we can do this layout in pure Java. It's just much nicer if we do it using XML. So if we want to create a new activity, we have our application created, we want a new activity. We're going to right-click our package inside of Eclipse, and we're going to say we want a new class. And so that's going to create a new class for us, but it's not automatically going to create a new activity. So we need to make sure we import the necessary libraries, which we'll see, and then we're going to extend the activity class, which is a class provided to us by the Android API. So if we want to create a layout for that associated class in XML, that is going to go in the res/layouts folder. So we can do the same thing in Eclipse over to the left. We're going to right-click the layouts folder. We're going to say we want a new file, and we're just going to call it hello.xml, since we're calling our new activity hello. Finally, we also need to modify this thing called the Android manifest. So this is a special XML configuration file that basically lets Android know what all of the activities are in your app. So we just need to add a new element to that XML file, letting Android know that we have this new activity and here's what we've called it. So we'll discuss intents in detail later, but an intent is basically an abstract object that contains two things, something to be performed and where it's being performed from. So intent is a class provided to us by the Android API. So if you want to create, start a new activity from within a single activity programmatically, so the user clicks a navigation item in your app and you want to show a new activity based on that click, we're going to create a new intent because the user intends to show a new activity. So this first argument is going to be our current activity, and the second argument is going to be the activity that we show. Syntax looks a little weird just because of how Java works, but it's very basic. It's just where we're from and where we're going. So if we call this start activity method provided to us by the Android API, we're going to show a new activity that we've defined in this intent object. So As we saw in lecture, when we're looking at our layouts, every GUI element has an XML element associated with it. So just like HTML, if we wanted to style these elements or give them additional information, we're going to give these XML elements attributes. So a lot of these attributes are prefaced with Android colon. So the attribute layout width and layout height can adjust the width and the height of your element. So if you wanted to fill up the parent element or just make the element sized according to its content, we can give it different values. So these GUI elements are encapsulated in layers, which are also just XML elements. So here's a few of the different types of layouts we can use. The frame layout is for a single GUI element, so that's designed for something like showing a picture where what's displayed inside of it is going to be swapped in and out. If we have a linear layout, which is what we saw today, then all the elements will be automatically horizontally or vertically arranged depending on the attribute we give it. So the value of that attribute will be horizontal or vertical. We also have a table layout where we can define table rows and table columns, just like your traditional HTML table with your TDs and your TRs. And finally, a relative layout, where we can say we want this button to be below this text box, and we want this other button to be to the right of that other button. So this is really much more flexible than just a linear layout where we say every element is going to be below the one before it. So while we're in Eclipse, we have this really handy graphical editor. And so I personally don't prefer graphical editors, but if you do, feel free to use it. What it is really handy for is it's a concise list of all of the GUI elements you can have inside of your app. So if you want to add a new element to the screen, you can just drag and drop it. If you right-click it, then you'll have a long list of all the attributes that element supports, and then you can adjust their value right from the editor. If you prefer to edit the XML yourself, you can just click on the XML tab and then change the values in there, and they'll be reflected when you go back to the graphical tab. So now for event handling. So we looked at this in JavaScript. It's going to be pretty much the same thing with Android. So just like in HTML, we can associate an ID with different GUI elements. So we can do the same thing in Java. So if we have an XML element called button, we can give that button a unique ID so that we can access that specific button. So this ID is just going to be an attribute of the XML element, which we'll take a look at. However, when we want to access these from Java, from our R class, because this is the automated class that contains all of our non-code data, we need to access it via its unique numerical ID. And so to do that, we're going to call this findViewById method. So this looks just like the document.getElementById, and it's doing basically the same thing. It's taking some string representing the ID of an element, and it's going into this R class, and it's finding the associated Java object. However, we're not giving this a string. We need to give this numerical ID, which we can get from the R class. So we'll take a look at that. So once we have this object, we can now bind event handlers to it. So just like in jQuery, we would get our objects, and we'd call bind, and we'd bind some type of event. We can do things like set on click listener, which just like JavaScript is going to take a function, and that function is going to be called whenever the event fires. So let's take an example. Let's look at some examples of all of this. So here, I'll zoom in. So here I've created a new project. Inside of my source, I have two files. So the first is our main activity. So this is the activity that will be shown when the app first runs. So this first code is the standard, what we looked at. So we are creating a new activity, and we're setting its content view to be the layout called main. So now we are getting a button. So we've called this button button, it's a great name for a button, which we'll take a look at the XML, but we're getting the numerical ID of this button via the r.id.button. So this class is automatically generated, and so these properties have been added to this class by Eclipse for us. So now we're calling this set on click listener, and we're just creating an anonymous inner class. So we're saying we want to create a new listener, and that listener implements a single function called on click. So basically, this on click function is going to be fired whenever the button is clicked. The syntax is a lot less elegant than JavaScript, but you can tell it's kind of doing the same thing. So once this button is clicked, we want to create our new intent. So we're just calling this I. And so as you remember, the two arguments to this intent constructor in this case are where the event is being fired from and what it's doing. So we want to show an activity, the activity hello. So here's that hello.class because that's the class file representing the activity that's going to be shown. And we're showing it from the current activity. So our class name is section3app1. And now we can call startActivity on that intent object. So any questions on this? Yeah?
So the way you set this up, the button is a class, it's not a class variable, it's a function variable for the onCreate method, and the onClick is an anonymous function within the setOnClick listener. Is that correct?
Yes. So button is a view. So it's also a button class, but button is just a subclass of view, so I just called it view. And so we're calling a method on that object called setOnClickListener. And so this method takes one argument, and that is an object of the onClickListener class. So we're just creating an anonymous inner class, and that class says you need to implement this one method called onClick. And Android says that that method that is implemented, that onClick, is going to be fired whenever it's touched. So the syntax for this section1.this is a little funky just because we're now in an anonymous inner class and the this doesn't refer to section1app class anymore. It refers to this anonymous inner class. So the way we access the this variable is just with the outside class .this. The syntax is a little weird, but that's one way to do it. There are many other ways to do it. We could have made this class implement the onClickListener and then just define onClick within this class. That would have worked. There's many, many, many ways just to do this. This is just one of them. Other questions on this before we take a look at the layout side of everything? Okay, so let's take a look at the layout. So here inside of res, we have layout. And so we have two XML files. So the first defines the layout for this first activity. And so here I've created a button. Let me zoom in a little more. So I've created a new button using the XML element button. So the first thing I'm doing is I'm giving it an ID. So we can't just say ID equals button like normal people. But the syntax for creating an ID in Android, because IDs are really special and that Android needs to add them to this R class for us, is the at, then the plus, then ID slash, and then what your ID actually is. So then we give this a width and a height, and now we're giving it some text. So we don't actually want the text to be at string slash button label, but this is a predefined constant that we've defined in our strings.html file. So let's take a look at that. And here we go. So this strings.xml file has three elements, and they're all strings. So here we've set a string called button label. We've called it button label with the name attribute. And so this is the value that's going to be displayed in the button. So the way we access constants defined in the strings.xml is with this at string, saying we want something in the string XML file, slash, and then it's going to be the name of the string that you want. So these names have to be unique. You can call them whatever you want. And so that's our first activity. So any questions on that? Yep?
Does it have to be a string? Is the string the name of the file?
So the question was, is the string the name of the file? So which string?
At string.
Oh, so the at string is a special constructor. So it's saying that strings.xml is a file that's automatically created for you when you create a new Android project. So that's telling Android to look in that special strings.xml file. So what happens if we created a file called @strings.xml? So notice that this is stored in a special folder called values. So each of these folders does something else. So we can't really just create an arbitrary XML file and expect to use it. We want to create XML files to do specific things. So in this case, We're holding string values, and then we can create XML files for layouts, and those are going to be in a different folder. So this is it's just kind of a syntax thing, or a naming convention thing, that if we want predefined constants in our app, just like, you know, the pound define at the top of our C++ program, we're going to put them in this strings.xml, and we access them with at string slash and then the name. That's a good question. I don't think so. That's something to look up, but it is a convention to put these strings, which is really the most common thing we'll need, inside of it. So the question was, can we just create a file called like constants.xml? I don't know off the top of my head, but that wouldn't really be too convention-y. Just because this one string XML file is really usually what you see referenced.
So speaking of looking things up, is there a place where all of this is documented somehow?
Yeah, so we'll take a look at the documentation page. We're talking about tools. So the question was, is there some page where all of this is just listed out for us? And if we go to developer.android.com, we have this nice Java doc type thing where we can look at all the classes on the left and see all the public methods and properties of all these different Android things. So we'll take a look at that later. Other questions so far? Okay, so we mentioned that this demo is going to have two activities. So I've defined the layout for my other activity in hello.xml because I've called the activity hello. And so here I have a similar thing. I'm still using a linear layout, and this page, instead of having a button, just has a text view. And so it's going to contain a different text, a different string defined in my strings.xml. So if we run this, we click on this run button, and we're going to fire up the emulator. So as Dan mentioned, it does take a little while to load. But while it loads, are there any other questions on this simple app that shows two different activities? Any questions yet? Okay, so let's take a look at some other examples while the simulator is loading. So we can close this project, open up another one. So here's a little more complex of a layout. So let's say that we want to have a layout where some elements are next to each other, but others are on top of each other. So to do that, we're going to put layouts within layouts. So it's kind of weird to play with at first, but this first linear layout has an orientation of vertical. So this says that everything inside of this layout is going to be vertical. So notice that all of these linear layouts are currently vertical. So if we were to change this to horizontal, which we will do once the simulator loads, we can see what happens. Okay, so here's our simulator, and we're running that first app. So as we mentioned, that first activity just has a single button. The text is, here is my button, because that's what I've defined in strings.xml. I click on this button, and I'm going to be taken to my next activity. So notice it animated over for me, and this next activity just has a text view that says hello for my other activity. If I wanted to get back to the previous activity, unlike on the iPhone where you have that back button usually along the top, the user would have to click the back button on their phone, and they would go back to that previous view. So the user experience on an Android and iPhone is a little different. And that Android has this back button that's supposed to work for all apps, where iPhones have more of a, if you want a back button, you put it in yourself. So any questions on that first app? So our second app looks like this. So now I'm not going to close the simulator because it takes so long to open, but if I just click run again from a different project, you'll notice that we're now installing Section 3 App 2. So with one emulator instance, we can run a new app on top of it without starting a new emulator. So Eclipse is smart enough to say, okay, well, if an emulator is already running, I'm not going to start a new one. I'm just going to install the package on the currently running one and then bring that activity to the foreground. So here's our second app. So this has one of my favorite widgets because it's so totally unnecessary, but a rating widget. And so here we've listed three of the members of the teaching staff. In case you needed a little hint on what to rate people, I've included that. So you'll notice that our XML kind of says that that's exactly what it's going to look like. So we have three different layouts. And now all of these are vertical. And so that's going to say that this text view is going to be displayed on top of this rating bar. So if you look at the attributes we have, the size is going to be wrapped content. So we're going to say that our text view isn't going to extend all the way across the screen. We're just going to extend as long as we need it to, depending on the content. And so we can set the text. So you'll notice that I don't have to use a predefined strings from @strings.xml. We can actually just put some text in here. It is nice to have that defined constant, though. So if you wanted to change something like the alert message all over your application, you wouldn't have to edit a bunch of different XML files. But just for the sake of demonstration, we can just give it an arbitrary text value. So now if we go down here, zoom out, go down here. So let's take a look at this rating bar. So it has the same width and height properties. And we also have this rating. And so I looked this up on the Android developer page to see what things I could do with the rating bar. And I noticed we have this rating property. And so this can be a value from 0 to whatever you've set the rating bar to end at. So if I give it 5, we know the rating bar is going to start off at a value of 5. Finally, this text size. We're looking at this SP as our unit. So we're used to seeing things like points and pixels. However, all these devices have different pixel densities. So eventually we get to the point where the pixel density is so high that a pixel is kind of a meaningless unit of measurement because there are so many pixels per inch. So this SP stands for a scaled pixel. And this is basically a pixel size independent unit that's kind of the equivalent of like point or something. But for our purposes, it's basically a pixel value, but it's going to look the same regardless of the pixel density of the device. So SP instead of PX. So now if we change the orientation of one of these layouts, we can see what's going to happen. So the first one, horizontal. So now if we change the orientation of this first linear layout to vertical, and now we run our app, so the question was, if I change that, do I have to recompile the app? Newer versions of Eclipse has this really cool thing where it kind of compiles it on the fly for you. So every time you save a file, it's actually going to compile it all for you. So a lot of modern IDEs do that with this really fancy, cool compiling technique thing, which I don't know enough about. But basically, the bottom line is you don't have to build and then run. Every time you save, Eclipse is going to try to build it for you. It's going to let you know if you had any build errors. And if there aren't any, then just clicking run is going to run it. So here you'll notice that only the first layout has been switched to horizontal. So now our text view is to the left of our rating bar because we said the layout, the orientation should now be horizontal. So any questions on this layout? All right, let's take a look at a third. So we'll close out this project. Open up this third. Okay, so now we're no longer just using this linear layout. So this is an example of the relative layout in which you can say, I want this element to be in some position compared to this other element. So I have three elements on my page. I have an edit text element, which is basically the equivalent of an HTML input. So So it's not like a text box, it's just like that narrow text input area. And I have two buttons. So you'll notice that I've given this edit text an ID. So here's the syntax again, just that at plus ID slash text box. And so now I can reference that ID from my other elements. So here we have this layout below. So this first button, we want this button to be below the text box. So if we say layout below, we can give it the ID of the element we want it to be below. So in this case, we have at ID slash text box. You'll notice the lack of a plus, another syntactic great idea. But basically, the plus is declaring an ID. And if you want to reference another ID, we can just use at ID. Strange conventions you have to get used to. So also, in addition to being below this text box, we can set where we want it to be aligned relative to this text box. So we want this to be all the way at the left of the parent. So in this case, the parent is going to be the layout itself, right? Because all of these XML elements are just siblings. They're not children of each other. And so we have one button at the left of the parent, which in this case is the layout, and one button at the right of the parent. So if we take a look at what this looks like, we'll run that. So the question is, how do we control how far below or how far to the left or right? So in the previous example, I glossed over it, but there's an attribute called padding. And so just like in XML, you know, you have paddings and margins to adjust spacing among elements. If I were to give the button a padding top of something like 30 SP, then we'd push it down 30 pixels. So here's our app. We have one button all the way to the left, one button all the way over to the right. So any questions on the relative layout? Or this app? Sure.
Is there any encounters inside IDE, or is it just something you have to know?
I'm sorry?
Is there any
IntelliSense? Oh, is there any IntelliSense in the IDE? Yes. Eclipse is actually fantastic at IntelliSense. So while we're editing, I'll zoom in. Let's say that I want to do something to this button, and I can't really remember what the attribute is. So we're going to type in Android colon, because we know it has to begin with Android colon, and then we have this whole nice list of things that appeared automatically for us, and so we can look around and say, oh, you know, maybe we wanted to set the number of lines or the height or something. We just click enter, and it's going to populate it for us. And so now we can give it a value. So to invoke IntelliSense yourself, if you don't want to wait for it, if you hit control enter, it's going to bring up the list based on, it's contextual, so it's going to know that it's prefixed by an Android, so it's going to pull up a list of all the things that start with Android colon. Yep?
Did you say there's a drag and drop graphical tool, or there isn't one?
So the question was, is there a drag and drop graphical tool? And the answer is yes, and that's what the next app will show. Other questions? Okay, so let's look at that graphical editing tool. So we'll get rid of this. So we will close project. Okay. So here I've been using the graphical editor, and so Eclipse remembered, oh, you used the graphical editor to create this. So down the bottom here, we have these two tabs. So graphical layout and then main.xml. So if I switch between these, I'm going to switch between this graphical layout and this XML. So let's take a look at the graphical editor. So here, as I mentioned, over to the left is all these elements. So if you ever forget what a text box is called, you can kind of scroll through here until you find out that it's called a text view. So here are some interestingly included widgets. We have a date picker, we have a slider, we have like a drop down, and we have a clock. So if we run this, we can see what this looks like. And so what this looks like on the device and what this looks like on the editor, you can see are exactly the same thing. The only difference is what's being populated, Like, so you'll see the date picker actually has values, and you can interact with it on the simulator where you can't on this graphical editor. So to work with this graphical editor, if you want to add and remove elements from the screen, you can select an element. You can just click it. If you click delete, it's gone. And if you wanted to add my favorite rating bar back, we just clicked on rating bar. We can drag it over. We drop it. And there's our rating bar. So if we want to edit the attributes of these XML elements, we can do one of two things. We can go back over to this main.xml, and you'll notice that we've actually been given a unique ID for each of these things, so that's kind of handy. And we have all these other attributes populated for us. However, if we wanted to do something like change this clock, if we right-click it, we can see all of the attributes that can be changed. So we can change the orientation attribute, so we can set it to horizontal or vertical, as well as the width and the height. So same thing for the slider, we can right-click it. For a longer list of properties, we can go into this properties menu, and then we can see this huge scrollable thing of all the possible things we can change, as well as all the possible values for those attributes, which isn't always clear just by the attribute's name. So any questions on using the graphical editor? It's a really nice way to kind of prototype your layout, since it's not immediately obvious what something is going to look like if you just see XML. So now we can go back here. So if you're reading through the Android documentation or maybe some of these Android books, there's a distinction between an activity and a task. So an app can consist of many different activities. So the app we looked at first consisted of two activities, so two different screens that were part of the same app. Now, the Android documentation also makes a point of defining a task. And so a task is a more higher-level abstract something that the user is trying to accomplish. So that could be email a picture from my phone. So to do that, we're going to need different apps, presumably. We have a camera app, we have an email app, and those two apps need to interact. So the user can proceed from different activities of different apps to accomplish a single task. And so this is done using intents, which we'll take a look at next week. But basically, Android allows the user to select what app they want to use to perform something. So from the camera app, if we click on something like email, we can actually pull up a list of installed apps on the device that would provide that functionality. So we can tell Android what functionalities our app provides, and then also ask the user what app they want to use to do something else. So basically, the way we do this is with multitasking. So the user can do multiple things at once. They can have their camera open, they can have their photo editor open, and then they can have their browser open. So even though those are separate tasks, because browsing the internet is not necessarily accomplishing the task of emailing a photo, the Android VM is really optimized for this multitasking, having many things open at once. So any questions on that? It's a little abstract. But reading through the documentation, you'll see this mention of activities and tasks, and they're really two different things. Where usually activities are within an app, and tasks are using different apps to accomplish something, where I can go into the activity of an app in order to accomplish a task. Okay. So now let's take a look at the tools provided by the SDK in a little more depth. So as we looked at a lecture today, in order to run this emulator, we're going to need AVDs, or Android Virtual Devices. And so these are basically emulator configurations that allow you to simulate a specific device. So from the AVD, you can specify hardware components as well as software components. So you can say the resolution of the screen as well as the build of the SDK that is going to be loaded onto that device. So to do this, to invoke this AVD manager, from Eclipse, we're going to click Window, and then we can click on Android SDK and AVD manager. So from this manager, we can create new AVDs, edit existing ones, or delete existing ones. So to take a look at what that looks like, if we go to Window, then SDK and AVD manager, So here we can create new ones. We can edit my existing. And so here we can specify options like an SD card. So I've said I want mine to have an SD card of 10 megabytes. And then we just have default values for things like screen resolution. So when we're actually emulating a program and we want to specify what AVD to use, we're going to change the run configuration. I clicked on the wrong one. So to do that, we're going to open up the Run menu along the top, and then we're going to go into Run Configurations, and then under Android Application, we're going to see a list of the AVDs on our system, and we can pick one to be used by the app. So if we go up here to Run Configuration, we see here in our project that we have, here's the AVDs I have. I just have one. If we wanted to use a specific AVD, we could just check it off. And by default, the Eclipse is going to choose the AVD that matches your target. So in my project, I said I wanted to target the 2.3.3 API. And so Eclipse is going to recognize that I have that AVD installed, and it's going to use it. But if I wanted to try this on, say, a 1.5 AVD, I wouldn't have to create a brand new project that created 1.5, that targeted 1.5. I could just go into this configuration menu and move that up in the list. So any questions on AVDs from Eclipse? Sure.
Can you download AVDs for actual physical devices?
Can you download AVDs for actual specific devices? If you Google around, you may be able to find configurations. But looking up the hardware specs, you could kind of pick out the resolution that you wanted. But if you Google around, you probably can find some. I don't know any sources off the top of my head.
In general, a lot of those have proprietary manufacturer stuff on it. So what's in the AVDs is all just open source Android stuff.
Right. So what is in the AVDs is has to be open source. Maybe HTC doesn't want to make their UI available, or maybe they do. So we know that any AVDs we create are all purely open source, basically bare bones Android, nothing like Moto Blur on top of it. OK. So now, the emulator. So as we've seen, we can start up the emulator by just running an Android project. If, however, you want to use the emulator for something else, like, say, testing a mobile web app, you can just invoke the emulator from the command line. So we're going to cd our change directory into our SDK folder. So you may have installed it in C Eclipse or somewhere else. And from that folder, we run emulator, and then we give it the AVD argument, and then we can just specify what AVD we want. So in this case, I just have one called AVD 2.3.3, so I would give that as my AVD name. So as I mentioned, this emulator is extremely, extremely slow. And closing it every time you're done with it is going to exponentially increase your development time. So and that's because the emulator is actually simulating the Android hardware. So when we look at the iOS simulator later, that's actually using the actual processing power of your MacBook or whatever device you're on. The Android simulator, however, is actually simulating the little 1 gigahertz processor that's actually in your phone. So the result is a slower emulator, but one that is slightly more what performance is going to look like on the device. That being said, it's really slow, and the emulator is probably going to be a lot slower than your actual device. But you won't run into this problem of, oh, wow, my app is really fast in the simulator, but I load it onto a device, and it's horribly slow. But bottom line, if you're using Eclipse to develop a project, basically leave the emulator open for the entirety of the time Eclipse is open, and you'll save yourself a lot of time. So there's a debugging tool, it is cool, called ADB. And so this basically allows us to connect to our emulator instance from the command line. So if we're going to go into our SDK directory, inside of that is a folder called Platform Tools. And inside of that is our ADB executable. So if you run the command ADB devices, we're going to list all the emulators currently running and all the phones, if I were lucky enough to have one, that were connected to the computer. If we want to kind of remote into that emulator, so we have like a shell inside of that emulator, we're going to say ADB shell. And then we're going to be basically inside of our device where we can run some cool commands. We can also transfer files to and from the emulator using ADB. So this could be useful if you're dumping output to some file on the device and you want to look at that on your computer. We could say ADB pull, give the path to the file we wanted, and then the path to where we want to save it on the computer. Same deal if you wanted to push data to the device, like you had a database that you made in your computer and you wanted to put the SQLite 3 file in your device, you can do that with push. So it's also a pretty stripped down Unix shell where you can do things like ls to list all the files in the directory, print the current directory, change directories, and also included are things like the SQLite 3 binary. So if you wanted to examine your database from within the Android device without copying the file onto your local computer, you could just run SQLite 3 and interact with it, just like you're using a regular SQLite database. There's also the command logcat, like longcat, I guess, but without the N, that we looked at in lecture. And so that's going to dynamically display all of the output that's being logged by our app. So we as developers, can log to our app using this log.i function. So log is a class. It's defined in the Android util package. And the i function says we're going to log something at the information level. And so we can filter our log so we don't see everything, but we only see things tagged as information or tagged as errors. And so as Dan mentioned, we have this cool thing called Monkey. And so this is really handy, and it's better than handing your phone to a two-year-old. And it's basically going to simulate random actions on the device. So you can say you want to specifically choose from this subset of actions, or you know just do this action, or you can just let the whole thing loose to see if it can crash your application. So to do that, we can either let it loose in the whole device, which is fun, or we can just limit it to our package. So we're going to use the dash p flag and give it the name of the package that we created for our app. This dash v says we want verbose output, so we want to output really everything that monkey's saying, and then the number of events to generate. So let's take a look at how we do that. So we can get rid of this, and we still have our app running. So I'm going to open up a terminal. So this is the equivalent of a Mac terminal, or what have you. Whoa. So this is my Android SDK folder. So you'll notice I have this folder called Platform Tools. So I'm going to go into it and zoom back out. And so here are all the executables. And now we see this ADB executable. So I'm going to run it. So I'm going to run ADB devices. And so now here's that list of devices attached. So if I just run ADB, if I run ADB shell, I'm going to fire up that shell where I'm now actually inside of the emulator. So if I run ls from here, I'm actually looking at files and folders that are on my Android device. So now that this app is running, let's fire up the logcat command. So logcat. So now it's just outputting all the previous things logged by the app. And now, if I interact with this app, I click the back button, you can see that our logs are adjusting accordingly based on what I'm doing. So I click the back button again, and you can see that things are being logged. So if I were to call, so let's say that I want to actually output something for debugging purposes. You know, instead of showing like a pop-up, I just want to log it to this logcat thing. So I'm going to quit it with Control-C. And I'm going to add that to that first app. So let's close this project and open up this other one. So this was the first app we looked at. Remember, it has two activities. So let's say I want to log something. So I don't think I've already included it. Yeah. So we're going to import Android.util dot log. And now when we click it, we're going to log. So we're logging from an app called Hello. And we're going to say switching views. So now if I save this and I run it, so here we go. We're back in this first app. And we're going to go back in and run logcat. So now when I click this button, you'll see that right here, we logged from the app called Hello, we logged switching view. And so you'll notice this I at the beginning, because this was just some informational text. If we'd use a function called v, it would have been marked as, you know, verbose text. And as Dan showed, you can filter based on these levels when you start up logcat. So now let's take a look at monkey. So if we run monkey, since our app doesn't do, so my app doesn't really do anything, I'm just going to run it on the whole device. I specify v for verbose, and I'm going to give it 10 events. So now, if I zoom back out and I run that, you'll notice that we just opened up another random thing, we clicked a button, and that was our 10 actions. So if I zoom in a little bit, so the action is going on in the emulator. So let's run it again. So monkey v10, I hit enter. And we just noticed that, I don't know if you caught it, but the monkey just simulated really quick presses of both of those buttons. Question?
Can you capture a sequence so you can replay the
sequence? Yeah, so the question was, can you capture a sequence and replay sequences? There are a lot of cool things you can do with monkey. There's a whole developer page devoted to just monkey, so you can read up on the configuration options there. But just in the interest of time, let's just take a look at the telnet things we can do. So the question was, does the Eclipse allow you to do single stepping with breakpoints and stuff? Yep, all the standard Eclipse breakpoint functionality is there inside of that debug view. So we can take a look at that afterwards on how we would do that. And the other question came up, can we use monkey from Eclipse? Probably. The problem with that, the debug view, is that it's really a lot of information at once, and it's a lot of times nicer just to have a single console window open where you're having all of your output. So in addition to ADB, we can telnet into the device, and that got horribly cut off. So we can, once we telnet into the device, we can do some other stuff that's not things we can do from a shell. So for example, we can set the power of the device to a specific percentage, so the device would react to that power change. We can set the network speed. So if we were doing something like downloading a lot of files from the web, and we wanted to find out, you know, what if the user's connection isn't that great, or if they're running on Edge versus GSM, we can simulate those connection speeds with the network speed command. We can also simulate calls and SMSs to the device. If we type call from a number, or like we saw in lecture, SMS send from a number. And then finally, we can set the geolocation of the device so that any GPS apps will be able to pick up on some Sentinel data. So, oh, and by the way, to connect, we're going to run the command telnet on localhost, and we're going to give it a port. Well, this port is given by the emulator number, which you can see in the little minimized window. So just really quickly, let's take a look at that. So here my port is 5554. All of your emulator instances will start at that number. If you have multiple running at the same time, you're going to go up to 556 and onward. So if I open up my terminal, so I can just telnet localhost 5554. So now we're actually telneted into the device. So let's do something like set the power. So notice that it looks like it's charging. If I set the power to 10, capacity 10. So now I've set the power. And so now you'll notice the battery meter is a lot lower, or it was. So if I do power capacity 10, now the battery is red because I've changed the power. We looked at SMS and lecture, but those are just a quick list of things you might want to do from the device, which is done via telnet connection, not from the ADB. Even though they're kind of similar things from your perspective from the terminal, there are two different methods to interact with your device from the terminal. So that's all for section today. Feel free to post to help with any questions. And the project is due Thursday, so good luck finishing that up.